The banking inquiry, which began in the past half hour or so, received a significant blow yesterday when it was confirmed that the European Central Bank will not be participating in its deliberations. In a letter to the committee from the president of the ECB, Mario Draghi said they will not participate and will not appoint a contact person. Earlier, speaking with Fianna Fáil Senator Mark McSharry, a member of the Banking Inquiry Committee, and the Fine Gael MEP Brian Hayes, I first put it to Mark McSharry, the ECB is not for turning.
Yeah, that would appear to be the case. But as I said, I would be guided by the people in this regard. I think that the people are entitled to answers. And when you consider that the ECB are the body most associated with the monetary policy that affects this country in terms of setting interest rates and so on, that clearly was a very significant part of the story of our demise through the decade of the boom bust. So it's simply incumbent on the national government to raise this at international level through leader summits, through Brian Hayes' own committee and the European Parliament, and also ECOFIN, the Council of Finance Ministers, because the people of Ireland are entitled to have answers to the questions. I mean, there are a number of clearly known unknowns, many of which lie with the European Central Bank, particularly when one considers the publication of the letters which were issued to Brian Lenihan, which seemed to apply undue pressure on how the scenario was going to be handled here.
And do you think that somehow they can be persuaded by groups like ECOFIN or even prime ministers, if the Taoiseach was to try to bring some pressure, to change their position, even though the European Central Bank is an independent body?
Yeah, I think it would be bizarre if they didn't. You simply cannot have a body with this sort of influence refusing to cooperate with an inquiry, which is of very significant implications for this country. And indeed, if it was one of the larger countries, such as Germany or France, I have no doubt that if it required European directives to be passed to force these people to participate, then they would. After all, they're paid by the taxpayers of Europe, including the taxpayers in Ireland. And I think that people are entitled to have the benefit of their expertise, their advice and their knowledge of a scenario that had very, very serious implications for the families throughout Ireland.
Brian Hayes, MEP, can the ECB be persuaded to change its mind on this?
Well, I very much hope that's the case, Sean. I have questioned President Mario Draghi on two separate occasions on this very issue. At the monetary dialogue between Econ, my committee here in the European Parliament, and him on two separate occasions in the last 4 months. And I think on each of those occasions, he's made the distinction between formal engagement and informal engagement. The point has been raised repeatedly by Ciarán Lynch, the chair of the committee, that there were two things that the committee were looking for. One, they were looking for a contact person between the ECB, a dedicated person who would be a kind of a communication channel between the ECB and the inquiry. And Draghi has ruled that out in his letter, as I understand. But secondly, Ciarán Lynch and his committee were looking for access to documentation. Now, I think that's probably the crucial thing here. Because even though the ECB has already put up on its website quite a number of documents surrounding their decisions at the time, we do need to have, and I agree with Mark on this, formal engagement by the ECB at the committee itself. Now, Patrick Conan will be attending, as I understand, but he will be giving the perspective of the governor of the central bank. I have been repeatedly putting this point to Mario Draghi. I very much hope that they will change their mind on this. He claims that he's accountable to us as members of the European Parliament because he comes before our committee for what's called this monetary dialogue, this discussion between MEPs and him. But it's not the kind of direct accountability that we would understand it in terms of the Oireachtas. I think it's very important that people like me continue to explain to the ECB and to other EU colleagues that this inquiry is not a witch hunt. It's made up of very serious members of the Oireachtas. I've been very impressed by the comments I've heard by people so far. They haven't gone over the top in their remarks. They've been tempered by the legal constraints. I heard Piers Doherty yesterday in Morning Ireland, and I thought he was very fair in what he had to say. And I think there is a resolve amongst Ciarán Lynch and his team to get this issue over the line, to give the Irish people the right to hear this. And the Irish people have a right to hear this. But without the ECB, it would be a bit like Hamlet without the prince. And I think we have got to continue to use influence we have in the European Parliament to make sure that we can change their mind on that.
Mark McSherry, could Patrick Holohan not come along wearing maybe a second hat? Obviously, he's governor of the Central Bank, but he's also on the Council of the European Central Bank, and maybe he could explain or fill in any gaps that may give rise to questions in members' minds when they see the documentation.
No, as Brian rightly pointed out there, I mean, he'll be wearing the hat as governor of our central bank, and indeed initially in the context phase, he'll be wearing the hat as an author of one of the reports on the period. No, it's vitally important that key personnel from the ECB cooperate, formally attend, and as Brian has said, make sure that any and all documentation sought are made available to us so that the people of Ireland, who, in essence, with the level of austerity they paid, with the paying of bond holders on the say-so of the ECB, effectively saved the euro during that period. And I think that Europe owes it to the Irish people to ensure that the full arsenal of resources that they have at their disposal are available to the Irish people in trying to, number one, answer the unanswered questions, and number two, ensure that we have the correct measures in place to prevent such a catastrophe happening again.
On that note of agreement, we'll leave it there. Mark McSherry, Senator Mark McSherry, a member of the Banking Inquiry Committee, and also Brian Hayes, member of the European Parliament. Thank you both for being with us. And we had that conversation just about an hour ago, and as you've been hearing in the bulletin, the first witness at the inquiry's hearings is the Finnish finance expert Peter Nyberg. He, of course, is a man who conducted an investigation into the failings in Irish banks, and here are some of his opening remarks.
I have no other documentation available to me than the published report to assist me in answering members' questions. All the documents used as sources are securely deposited according to the Act when the Commission was dissolved and have not been available to me since. And I, without doubt, will do my best, but I hope that the Chairman will keep this constraint in mind as well as the years which have elapsed since my work was completed. The Commission's work was in essence about the why of the Irish crisis and not about the who. Consistent with its governing legislation and the terms of reference, the Commission was not required to name names and decided from the beginning not to do so. And of course, Mr. Chairman, and I know this is not generally accepted, but the responsibility for mistakes is already obvious in my mind. Directors and senior staff as well as junior staff are responsible for the decisions they are empowered to make, and the names of them are quite often listed in published national accounts of the banks.
And Peter Nyberg also explained why he thinks the government of the day in 2008 made a safe decision by guaranteeing the banks.
So, in the end, the question was, when one sat there on the evening, much like you sit here in the morning, what should be done to avoid a collapse and closure of the banking system the following morning? And from previous experiences, Mr. Chairman, from back home, when decision makers are faced, you know, with that situation, what one tends to do is to make the safe decision, even though afterwards might not seem so wise. And that is, I think, what the government did.
So that's Peter Nyberg there, Dutch finance expert who carried out that first inquiry into the collapse of the banks. Brian Dowling of our political staff is with me. Brian, first of all, the absence of ECB formal involvement, no point person, no contact person, perhaps some documents. Is that a big blow?
I don't think it's a huge blow, Sean. It's a blow. I don't think there's any doubt about that, but it's not unexpected. I think it had been clear from some months back that the ECB was always going to be reluctant to be active participants in this inquiry in terms of people either attending to give evidence or having a contact person or a point person where you could filter information, questions back and forth. I think to the extent that it removes a significant element of the various factors that came into play leading to the collapse and the bank guarantee and the bailout, it poses a difficulty for the inquiry because it's one significant area of work where they're not going to be able to get direct evidence. They can, of course, elicit the views of people who have international experience and banking experience on how they believe the ECB acted or didn't act or should have acted or whatever. But that's not the same as having the ECB sitting there answering the questions.
Mr. Nyberg there explaining when his commission carried out its work, the object of the exercise was to find out why, not who. Now, I suspect a lot of people watching it live, it's being streamed on RTE and also on RTE News Now channel, will be wanting to hear an awful lot more about the who as well as the why.
They certainly will be wanting to hear about the who and the individuals involved. And bearing in mind at all times, Sean, that this committee does not have any legal power to apportion blame in respect of any individuals or to make adverse findings in respect of any individuals. So we're not going to see that. That, however, does not mean that we will not see former government ministers, senior banking officials, all being asked to come before and to outline their recollection of what happened. The phrase you used the other morning, tell us your story. Tell us what
tell
you
know. Tell us all you know. Arthur Beasley's phrase in this morning's Irish Times, well paid then, well pensioned now. Let's hear from them. Let's see them.
And exactly that. And of course, a lot of the senior bankers at the time who have left the scene did leave with very, very handsome packages. And that left a very, very sour taste in the mouth of the public because of the enormous bill the taxpayers had to pick up and to bail out all of these banks.
On a positive note, one of the key figures, I think he was second secretary at the Department of Finance, Kevin Cardiff, quoted in the Irish Times today. Now, he's the man who was... who was given the chance to move to Brussels, I think it was, or was it Luxembourg, to the European Court of Auditors. He says, I've been waiting for years to get a chance to speak in an organised fashion. So as long as it is open and fair, I'm happy. So that's probably a bit of good news.
That's good news. And bearing in mind that back a number of years ago, Kevin Cardiff appeared at, just before the last government collapsed, he appeared before the Public Accounts Committee in one of their hearings, which was attempting to look at some of the issues around what had happened with the banking collapse. And he was being questioned at that time about the advice the department had available to it and the minister in the run-up to the decision to actually make the bank guarantee for all the assets and liabilities. And if I remember correctly, I'm subject to correction here, I think they had engaged, it was Merrill Lynch, and they had paid something like 8 or 9 million euro. And they had given them a list of options. And he was asked at the time, I think by Pat Rabbit, given that we paid this huge sum of money, how come we didn't go with the top of their list of options? In other words, the bank guarantee wasn't their preferred option from the outset. And at that point, he just shrugged his shoulders, looked across the table. And you were in that classic situation where, in that context, he simply was not free to expand on his views on a decision made by the government. Now, the difference with this particular inquiry is that there is a provision in this inquiry that officials who were in the department at the time or in the central bank will be able to give their views and will be able to discuss the kind of issues and advices that were there.
Now, elsewhere in the forest and directly as a result, obviously, of the banking crisis, we had the establishment of NAMA. They have an update today on the amount of debt they have redeemed. And I think they've announced plans as well for another big chunk of land within their control.
The Dublin Docklands project has been flagged for quite a while, and they've also announced that they're going to redeem another 500 million euro of debt. And this brings to, I think, 16.5 or thereabouts billion euro of debt that has been redeemed by NAMA, more than half the total they took on board at the beginning. And this is fairly consistent with the track record of NAMA to date, in that there have been indications over the last couple of months that NAMA may well complete its work ahead of schedule and that it may well, at the end of it all, turn in a profit, maybe a very modest or a very small profit, but a profit nonetheless for the taxpayers.
Brian, separately, the Minister for Health, Leo Varadkar, speaking in response to a private member's motion from the Independent, or at least the Socialist TD, Claire Daly, last night, seeking to have an amendment to the Constitution, or at least the removal of the Eighth Amendment on the equal status of unborn children and their mothers. He was talking about the need, as he sees it, to have further change.
I think the net, if you were to sum up his position in very simple terms, he said that he believes that the Eighth Amendment, and we'll remind people of the Eighth Amendment in a moment, is too restrictive. And he believes there we may be moving to a phase when perhaps it might be possible to reach a consensus on a way forward. But I think you have to look at his statement in the round. It's as frank and as typical as you might expect from Leo Varadkar. It's very nuanced, but what he's saying is essentially is that he doesn't believe in abortion on demand, but neither does he support the position of the Eighth Amendment and the restrictions as he sees it in the Eighth Amendment, particularly on issues like fatal fetal abnormalities. So he's talking about trying to find a middle ground, but there are a number of points, Sean, that are very clear here. He makes it very clear. It's not going to happen in the lifetime of this government. There's no mandate for it. So essentially, it's an issue somewhere down the line for a future government, maybe in the next Dáil, maybe not. The Eighth Amendment, as people may recall, was the amendment inserted into the Constitution in 1983, and that said, the state acknowledges the right to life of the unborn and with due regard to the equal right to life of the mother, guarantees in its laws to respect and, as far as practicable, by its laws to defend and vindicate that right. Now, Claire Daly last night was putting a motion before the Dáil to essentially have a new referendum to repeal that provision and replace it with a new one, which would allow for legislation for people who wanted to have an abortion in whatever the circumstances that they wish to have an abortion in. He opposed that amendment last night and said he didn't believe in the proposal put forward by Claire Daly. He felt it was as flawed and as ambiguous as the one that's there, which led, or ironically enough, to the introduction of abortion under the X case.
Brian, Leo Varadkar was due to do what we call a doorstep, in other words, a media opportunity to take questions and be asked them, but that was cancelled fairly close to the time at which it was due to happen. Now, would that suggest that he has caused controversy or any difficulty with his cabinet colleagues by last night's statement?
That's in the last short while, Sean, and I think there might have been an initial reaction that when it was cancelled that perhaps there were some political difficulties there. I'm told by some people around government that there are no political difficulties, that there's not an issue, and that before he spoke in the Dáil last night, that Leo Varadkar did have discussions with the Taoiseach and fellow ministers, and he indicated to them that he would be, that the government would be opposing the Claire Daly motion in terms of wanting legislation to have another referendum to repeal the Eighth Amendment, but that he also made it clear that he himself would indicate that he did not, he would not defend the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, that he personally had a difficulty with it and he would not be defending it. But again, Sean, in terms of this being a live political issue, it's not for this government. Whether it becomes one for the next government, well, then that's down to, would Fine Gael be willing to take a position, a policy position? I doubt it.
Yes, and that's why I'm wondering, I mean, is this what the government needed at the very end of a year? It's been something of an annus horribilis for the government a year after the departure of the Troika, with all the troubles over Irish Water and the rest of it, for the Minister for Health to be rolling this now in at this stage. Not exactly the kind of thing a lot of people would welcome.
Perhaps not. And mind you, in his speech last night, he did allude to the fact that in September he was asked about his views in respect of repealing the Eighth Amendment, and he didn't. He decided not to go there at that stage, feeling that as Minister for Health, his responsibility was towards the broader policy issues. But he chose last night to outline his personal view. And to the extent that he did, he made it very clear it is a personal view. I think he said, "I like to believe that I am a conviction politician, often definite, sometimes blunt, but this is an issue that requires compassion and empathy and not unshakable certainty." And I think that theme or that tone is evident throughout his speech, that he makes it clear that he's not certain that he has the answers either, but that maybe it might be possible in the future to reach some consensus by people in the middle ground.
Brian, thank you indeed for that. And sorry, just before you go, I think we can hear a little bit more from Mr. Nyberg, the Finnish expert. He is here. Here we have him telling the inquiry, the banking inquiry, that mistakes were made years before the night of the guarantee.
The mistakes were really not made at that, on that night. The mistakes were done, were made several years before, and not only by the government, but really by everybody else.
So that's Mr. Peter Nyberg. Just two of your texts. Can witnesses be compelled to appear in front of the inquiry? If so, surely the inquiry could summon named ECB officials to appear, and when they refuse, then go to court, says Colin. Well, I don't think the compellability powers which are in the inquiry extend beyond this state. And another one, Teresa in Port Arlington. Banking inquiry, my foot, a waste of time. We'll have more on it later in the programme.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.